for a Totally Unlimited. Totally together. Totally barefoot. Yeah, time. Book now and save on a 7-night total all-inclusive vacation to Club Med in the Caribbean, Bahamas, or Mexico. Call today. You'll totally want to do it again.
Oh, yeah. I'm a traveling man, made a lot of stuff. All over the world, and in every port, I've been a part of at least one lovely girl.
So that was very appropriate to introduce our next guest, Mr. Bob Fisher, who really needs no introduction to our audience. He's a man that's been around and doing many things for the show. And good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Roy. I didn't realize you were such a good old boy.
Oh,
you know, drifting down the river.
It was a great story.
I think a lot of people should have the experience of just drifting down a river with you.
Oh,
you know,
for 3.5 hours.
Learn a thing or two, and you know, and you're going to be talked about in the Finger Lakes area for a long time, I think.
Well,
and if anyone's planning a wedding, they'll probably just say, you know, you better be prepared for this Floridian to just drop in.
Well, I left my card. And a little note on the back saying, if you need any West Virginia cousins to, you know, to fill in the gaps, I can dress up. I've got all kinds of outfits we can throw together. But you know, Dave was great and Ralph was great, and it was really nice to hear them say how much they enjoyed themselves. And that's what this is all about. That's what travel is about. That's what sharing your life with people is all about. And what could have turned into a disappointing no fish situation with four poles there turned into one of the most, you know, one of the most marvelous adventures. And it was so nice to hear them say how they appreciated it, because I know, in spite of what they said, they were really looking forward to the Hooters girls.
But you know, at the risk of repeating myself, talking travel, as you know, I've told you so many times, is basically grassroots to the world. And that is exactly the kind of grassroots experience that all of us who contribute to this show have, wherever we go. And, of course, that's what I'm going to talk about today.
And, in fact, before we get to the subject, I know you're going off, you know, you're especially busy today, and we appreciate you taking the time, because you're off to India in the next few days.
Tomorrow, actually.
Yeah, and I guess you got my note that there's a pending airport strike.
Yeah, I got your note about that.
I'm sure that pleased you.
You know, when you travel, you got to be prepared.
Got to go with the flow.
Be flexible, go with the flow. And when you're going to a place like India, where I think the grassroots experience is going to be probably the most intense I've ever had, but I'll let you know that when I get back.
Well, let's go to Rain in Hiroshima's story. It's a very touching story, and why don't you start it off, Bob?
Well, in many ways, it's like so many destinations that are so important on this planet that one doesn't know where to begin. The title is Rain in Hiroshima, and it doesn't matter whether you say Hiroshima or Hiroshima. I tend to say Hiroshima. It's slightly closer to the way the Japanese pronounce the name. But Hiroshima is very much, of course, a symbol for one of the most the momentous moments in human history. We were traveling in Japan for about a month, and obviously on our itinerary was Hiroshima. And I can remember being, again, you talked about trains. The trains in Japan are absolutely superb. But I was on the train on the way to Hiroshima, and I started to feel this incredible kind of tension. And I was saying to myself, you know where you're going, just don't go there as a tourist, because the last thing I wanted to do was to visit Hiroshima as the stereotypical tourist, taking pictures and just not getting engaged. Well, as it turned out, there was no way that was going to happen anyway. And it partially had to do with many things, the weather being one of them. Do you remember when you were in high school English class and your English teacher used to teach you things about imagery and metaphors and symbols? And do you remember the mention of the term pathetic fallacy?
Exactly.
Which is a term that I think was very much my experience in Hiroshima. And pathetic fallacy is when we, as human beings, we transpose our emotions onto inanimate objects or to nature in general. You know, we use terms like angry clouds or cruel wind.
Just in my on the other side of it, my English teacher used to say, "You're pathetic."
Yeah, but she'd never drifted down a river.
Susquehanna
with you.
You got that right.
You know, but anyway, when we arrived in Hiroshima and the Peace Park in Hiroshima, it was raining, a very soft rain, and I now know that subconsciously, what, and this ends up, I think, in the article, what I was sensing really were the tears of humanity. And Hiroshima, whether it's Hiroshima or many other destinations that we visit, Holocaust museums, concentration camps, or World War I battlefields, I remember doing that.
And the World War II graveyard.
Even, you know, Pearl Harbor. These are important places for us to go, but when we go there, we learn an awful lot about ourselves as individuals, but also as a species. And there is a kind of a difficult part to the visit, and that is a kind of mourning for ourselves, for our potential as human beings to cause harm. And Hiroshima, of course, is that moment in time that changed the course of human history. And it really brought home to us, I think, in a very big way, our awareness of our species, our potential to not only destroy but to obliterate, and that's a very heavy duty concept to come to terms with. But going to Hiroshima, I think I use the word incongruence. It's a very contradictory, paradoxical experience because you visit the Peace Park, which is a beautiful location. It is very deliberately laid out in such a way as to create a sense of peace and tranquility.
Which I think only the Japanese have that knack to do with a garden around, you know, a destroyed structure.
Very much so. But it's, at the same time, you are totally, that peace and tranquility reinforces your awareness of what happened here, and what happened here that, as I said, changed the course of human history. And I remember Diana, my wife, and I crossed the bridge into the Peace Park, there was this feeling of kind of being detached and separate, but then I was being drawn towards this place. And you know how you're drawn towards, I don't know, it's very difficult if you're driving along and there's a car accident. It's very difficult not to stop and look because there, but for the grace of God, go I. There, you know, there is human suffering. And we are drawn to human suffering because I really believe that that as a human species that we do have an innate goodness in us that recognizes evil, that recognizes human suffering. And, you know, August 6, 1945, at 8:15 in the morning, that first atomic bomb, the first time it was ever used against humans, and it dropped on Hiroshima, and the entire city, of course, was leveled. And this is the spot, and when you first arrive in the park, one of the first things you see is what has come to be known as the Atomic Dome. And this is a burnt-out building that was at the exact epicenter where the bomb fell. And in a way, it has a very cruel beauty to itself, because it's a shell, and it's almost the key monument in Hiroshima to that day when over 78,000 people died instantly. And by the following December, 140,000 had died, and eventually 200,000.
Now, the A-bomb dome, was it the only major structure that survived this?
It was the only major structure, everything else. And I don't know why. And it was it was a trade exhibition hall with literally a dome. And
right.
If you look at my article, the very first picture there...
It's amazing.
The building is beside the river.
And this lovely garden.
And the lovely gardens, yes. And we were, in a sense, it's so difficult to find the words, but we were fortunate to be one of very few on, because it was early in the morning, and it was a rainy day, and it was a kind of a misty day, and so there weren't too many people there. It was also... I believe we were there in the off season. So the whole place had this very ephemeral quality to it. And you really had the opportunity to stop and think and feel. I remember walking across the bridge that, very ironically, the bridge originally had been built in a T-shape. Well, for, the aircraft that dropped the bomb, it was the perfect target. I mean, for the pilot, there is exactly where to drop it. Now, there are many historic, a lot has been written on the dropping of that bomb. Should it have been done? Should it not? And I'm not going to go there. I don't need to go there. I think it's, everyone's right and responsibility to decide for themselves what that event really was all about. But I think when we visit places like this, and this is a World Heritage Site, and whether it's, the battlegrounds, the war cemeteries of the First, Second World War, or whatever, I think...
It's a very moving moment.
It is a time for us all to really start to put things in perspective.
And reflect on ourselves.
Right.
Yeah.
And these kinds of destinations are very much, they have a timelessness to them. And also, I don't know if this is a contradiction in terms, but you also feel very much out of time. And that in itself allows you to... It's the greatest history lesson, and as you and I have discussed many times, travel is the most experiential form of learning, and especially of learning history.
Well, Bob, we have just about less than a minute, but
yeah.
there was the Peace Clock Tower that you mentioned, oddly, the time at 8:15 every morning, the chimes ring, which I thought was... was wonderful,
and it's that sound again, and it's like a universal appeal, and the one that I enjoyed the most is the Bell of Peace, this enormous bronze bell, and you are invited to pull back this log, a large log, and let it hit against the bronze bell, and the resonance goes on for almost a minute, and this, it's every traveler's way of sending a wish that all nuclear arms and wars be gone. I could go on and on. The rest of the information is in the article.
And it's up on our site. And the wars to be gone would be a wonderful thing. And it is a wonderful, wonderful article, Bob. And we've got to run.
Okay. Well.